Hey folks, it's Jesse, the founder of MaxFun. Since we postponed our annual MaxFun drive in mid-March, we have gotten a lot of questions about if and when we'd be rescheduling it. And honestly, we've been asking ourselves the same thing. Well, now we have an answer for you. The 2020 MaxFun drive will start on July 13th. That's coming up soon. We decided to have the drive now because it's always brought a lot of joy and excitement to our community and certainly to us. And to be totally honest, it's also the main source of income for some of our hosts. Like pretty much everything right now, this year's drive is going to be a little different. We'll still be bringing you very special episodes, fun community activities, premium thank you gifts, but we also know it's a weird time and for some folks, a really difficult one. Some people are in a position to become new or upgrading members, others can't right now, and that is okay. We'll have ways for you to support MaxFun at every level, including some ways that won't cost you anything. We're also going to run the drive for 4 weeks instead of two. We didn't think it was a good time to be rushing anybody, and having a longer drive lets us be a little more low-key in our drive pitch. It also gives us more time to do fun stuff, like the weekly live streams we'll be putting on for charity throughout the drive. Most importantly, we want the 2020 MaxFun drive to highlight all the ways we support each other and our communities. We also want to show how grateful we are to you for making all the work that we do possible. Stay safe. We'll see you July 13th for the MaxFun Drive.
Careful, man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm going to get that gun of mine, and I'm going to change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway, in the studio with my friends, the virtual studio, because of course we are, you know, staying far apart, wearing our mask. Make sure you're still doing that, no matter what your neighbors are doing, no matter what your governor says, until the scientists say that it's safe to go outside. Let's stay inside and wear our mask. It's not some QAnon weird conspiracy theory. It's science fact, okay? All right. So let's talk to my friends. First up, we got Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what's good?
Well, if he hand washing is also good, just to add to your list. Okay, I know this is a perennial, you know, good thing because they're always killing it. But I was really, I have to say, the Criterion Collection. You know, part of my ongoing like media blitz for, you know, buying DVDs and Blu-rays. They just came off a month where their output was everything from Buster Keaton to Celine Sciamma, with stops in the middle for like the documentary Tokyo Olympiad, which now that with all that's happening, it's the only Tokyo Olympiad you're going to get this month, and an unmarried woman. So like, they're just, you know, it's always a great mix of things. Of course, the Criterion Channel has been like a life support during all this, but I just, you know, they're always killing it. And so I just wanted to say, Criterion Collection, keep doing what you're doing.
Would you in fact say that's a science fact?
Science fact.
And I will say, you know, Alonzo is never wrong with his picks, and you'd listen to this man when he says to buy something, buy it. He tagged me last week and said, get Tokyo Godfathers, and it is sitting next to me right now. I can't wait to watch it. I'm like backlogged, but I'm also on hiatus from Super Punch, so I plan to just go into the dark place and just to watch a whole bunch of movies. Drea, what's good?
What's good with me is actually much more specific. Well, no, everything with Iffy is specific, but my very favorite artist, who's also a friend of mine, Jun Pierre Shiozawa, he released an online graphic novel with the writer Vali Chandrasekaran, and it's called Genius Animals. It's free. It's at geniusanimals.net. And it's so good and wonderful. And the pitch of it, like, Vali is normally a TV writer. He wrote for Modern Family and 30 Rock. And June is, he does every medium, but he's especially good in watercolor. And they paired up to make this graphic novel that is so, so beautiful. Like, there's long stretches with no dialogue and beautiful exchanges, but it has it's sort of got maybe a sci-fi twist. I just hit this conspiracy theory panels, but it starts with a love, two people falling in love, and then one of them disappears, and then the woman starts searching for him. And it's so good. Like, there's this whole section just of them falling in love and then running into some woman at the park that's, again, dialogue-free and the most believable thing I've ever seen. There's also the character that's introduced in the second. She works, the main woman works as an editor for a filmmaker named Werner Notzog. And... everything that this guy says is my favorite thing, and it's so perfect. So, Genius Animals, check it out. They're putting out one a week.
Speaking of graphic novels, and audience, please help me out here, because I asked on Facebook and got no answers. Apparently, there is a new DC YA graphic novel about Aqualad, who is now, in the current iteration, black and queer, and I need to know things. Do I need to buy this? It sounds totally like something I want to know about, but like I want some reviews, so
yeah.
Tell us in the comments or, you know, email us or whatever, like, should I buy the Aqualad book? Because I totally want to. And if you, what's good?
Oh, what's good with me is, you know, been doing a lot of watching. And one of my recent watches, which would be my staff pick this week if I didn't pick it staff pick twice, once because I had the wrong release date and the other when it actually released, was Promare. And and what's good of Promare is for those who don't know, the animation studio is Trigger, and they did my favorite anime of all time, Gurren Lagann, which I won't shut up about. But also what's good about Promare, Studio Trigger, and all that is they just signed on to do the anime based on the upcoming game Cyberpunk 2077, which, if you're like, what is this? Just know it's a video game being developed by the same people who did the Witcher series. And after the Witcher blew up Netflix was like, we don't care. We don't need to see the game. Here's our money. Make it. and they did. They were smart enough to be like, well, if we're going to do an anime, let's go with the most visually impressive, fun studios there is, and that is Studio Trigger. But today is also going to be fun because we're talking about Hamilton. We're taking a call from the Who Shot line, and of course we have staff picks. But first, it's time for our news segment, It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, is this important? Do I care? And of course, the first thing we're talking about is Quibi. And this discussion isn't going to take 5 minutes. For those who don't know about Quibi, it's the streaming platform for short form content meant to be watched primarily on your phone, much to the chagrin of Martin Scorsese. It was founded by former Disney chairman and DreamWorks co-founder Jeffrey Katzenberg with over $1.75 billion in initial investment. Since its launch in April, it has struggled to gain subscribers, and in a new profile in Vulture on the streaming service, CEO and failed gubernatorial candidate Meg Whitman was asked what TV shows she enjoy watching. In response, she said, I'm not sure I'd classify myself as an entertainment enthusiast. And when pressed, she replied that she enjoyed watching Grant on the History Channel about President Grant. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes.
I freaking love this. I know that the ultimate consensus will probably be, if you're going to be running a billion-dollar entertainment corporation, you should care about it. But she doesn't have jack to do with the content. And I love thinking of a female executive who's like, nah, I'm not going to like jump. There's no show pony here. Yeah. I watch Grant. I'm an old, very rich woman, and I work 80-hour weeks, and in my free time, I sit in my private lagoon or whatever.
The thing is, like, I mean, if you've not read this Vulture article, go read this Vulture article. Yeah. It is such a delectable autopsy of why Quibi is failing. And one of the things is that, yeah, okay, it's fine if you know, you've got one person who's the tech person and the other person who's the entertainment person, but neither Whitman nor Katzenberg seem to understand, like, their target audience is not the kind of people that pay for stuff online in yeah. general, and certainly aren't going to pay for the kind of things that they watch on YouTube. Their notion, like Katzenberg's idea of, like, his entertainment go-tos are things like America's Funniest Home Videos. He tried to pitch Gal Gadot after she apparently made an impassioned speech about empowering women and girls to see if she wanted to do workout videos for Quibi. Like,
just
both,
like Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
Because both, he heard her passion and was like, oh, you remind me of a young Jane Fonda. So I'm going to go with workout videos.
Oh, God. They are both. I mean, they both obviously know a lot of things about a lot of things, but they're also both colossally clueless about a lot of areas that are coming to bear in the massive, like, disaster that is Quibi. So, oh, yeah. Yeah. Read this article. It's amazing.
I mean, it really is. Quibi is just another one of those attempts where you have, like, older Hollywood types trying to figure out kids. And instead of hiring people around that age range and consulting them, like, you could have paid me the 0.05 billion and I would have told you why this wasn't going to work, because you look at things like YouTube, and especially me, who has been in both the YouTube Twitch world for so long, I think people really miss the mark when they see your YouTube. Like, they think it's the shortness of it, they think it's this, and really when it all comes down to it is the accessibility. People like YouTube uh-huh. because you don't need money. You just go to the website and you can be entertained, and you can pick exactly what you want and build that entertainment. It's not the length. It's not, there are YouTube videos that are like 3 hours long and people will still watch it. It's because they can go there. But everyone, like, the moment I heard the Quibi, they're like short form on the phone, I was like, okay. And then they're like subscription services, like, it's gonna fail. And I get told you about every YouTube channel that has tried to do an SVOD platform and did not work because YouTube was free. You can't take something that people like that was free and offer it for a price and think anyone's gonna jump for that.
And obviously the pandemic was gonna screw with anything that was designed to be enjoyed during a commute, you know, like, I get that that's an issue, but even taking that out of it, there were so many other things wrong with just the very idea of this whole network that yeah, this was, you're right, they didn't ask you, Iffy, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we've been piling on Quibi for months before they even released.
Oh
yeah.
Man, it's, you know, I was so ready for me to be disappointed of it somehow working, but it was everything we thought it would.
Yeah. This, yeah. Well, I'm gonna say
something else
that's just not working.
Speaking of bad ideas.
So Ms. Halle Berry has recently pulled out of a transgender film role after facing a backlash in an Instagram Live interview last week. Yes, last week in 2020, not in 2016, when she should have been making these connections. Instagram Live interview last week, Halle Berry said she was preparing for a role as a trans man. This is such a painful quote. Ugh, it's so tone deaf. Quote, it's a character where the woman is a trans character, so she's a woman that transitioned into a man. She's a character in a project that I love that I might be doing. Who this woman was is so interesting to me. That will probably be my next project. Her lack of pronoun knowledge is just...
Oh, yeah. Can I have a trans friend. I hated that sentence, but you get what I'm going at. My friend Reed Bryce, he said, why is it that every time a cis actor takes a trans role, it sounds like they just learned about being trans from a Wikipedia article?
Oh my God. No, literally. Or didn't. Anyway, Barry faced a great deal of backlash for misgendering the character several times through the interview, as well as the possibility of portraying a trans man at all. On Monday, she issued a statement saying she would be withdrawing from the film. Quote, I'd like to apologize for those remarks as a cisgender woman. I now understand I should not have considered this role. The transgender community should undeniably have the opportunity to tell their own stories. I'm grateful for the guidance and critical conversation over the past few days. We'll continue to listen, educate, and learn from this mistake. I vow to be an ally in using my voice to promote better representation on screen, both in front of and behind the camera. Is this important and do you care?
Yes. And I'll tell you, the best part of it, though, is that she, like, is immediately, like, stepping back saying, you know what? I fucked up. I did the wrong thing.
Yeah.
I'm now going to shut up and learn something, which is a page that so many other people could learn a thing from. Yeah,
that's exactly what I was going to say. Can we BCC Scarlett Johansson on this?
And fucking J.K. Rowling?
Yeah, let them copy and paste.
She shall not be named.
Yeah. That really is like such a, you know, we've seen so many apologies in the past few months and all, but it's such a good one because it doesn't put the blame on anyone but herself. There's so many times I see, well, since people think that
I'm
can't
sorry
do
that you
this,
were offended.
Yeah. It's a
good apology and exactly where it should come from. But it also tells me, I'm like, oh, the celebrities live in such a bubble of the fact that we've gone through and we've already talked about this in other cycles, like with Scarlett Johansson. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking, oh, you know, like, great, the world is no one. People who are not paying attention to anything mm-hmm. else, like, this was all new information for her. And it's the stuff on every level that's always upsetting to, like, activists or whomever. It's the Trump of, like, you know, nobody ever knew that. Did you guys know this? Yes, many people knew, dude.
Yeah, as you know, a member of this industry, I think it is a funny thing because I imagine Halle Berry isn't keeping up with Scarlett Johansson news or gives a fuck about J.K. Rowling. And I think it needs to start being on the onus of when conversations like this happens. Hopefully agencies and managers will be like, hey, so you know, this is what's going on. I'll get an audition and it'll be like a story about, you know, like a gay person, and it's like telling their story, and I'll be like, oh, I don't want to do this. And they're like, oh, okay, we got it, you don't want gay roles. I was like, no, don't put it like that. it's like, this isn't my story to tell, and I have to, like, you know, sit like beat for beat, because, you know, your agency is like, why aren't you, this is a role and this is going to be something good, and, you know, they want you to audition. I was like, yes, but like, I sent them the articles. Yeah, I was like, just because it's good for my career doesn't mean I should do it, especially when, you know, you do have, you know, LGBTQ people who aren't booking roles and then have to sit there at home and watch cis or straight people playing these LGBTQ roles. It's like, look, I know I'd like money. Trust me. Don't worry. I like money, but I also don't need money coming from someone else's pockets that would do better honoring this story.
And I think one of the best things that Halle Berry can do from this point, if this is a good role, if this is a good project, then, like, use her clout to get it made and get it cast with a really talented trans performer who is maybe not famous yet and maybe can't sell a movie on his name, but you know, Halle Berry can sell one on hers, you know, play the doctor, play the whatever, you know, that gets the movie made. So, but I got nothing but respect for her for, like, finding the right tone in, like, fixing the problem that she has created, you know. So I'm not going to pile onto Halle Berry. Played in the aftermath. So one last one.
Yeah.
One of my favorite writer directors, Charlie Kaufman, did an interview with the Wall Street Journal, talking about a new film that he's made called I'm Thinking of Ending Things. The movie is set to be released by Netflix in September, and he had this to say about the decision to produce the film with the streaming service as opposed to the traditional studio route. The business has changed enormously, and it all happened around 2008 when studios stopped making movies and started making tent poles. The reason something like Netflix attracts filmmakers is because there's nowhere else to make these things. It's infuriating to me when people say, oh, Netflix is ruining movies, because no, movies ruined movies, studios ruined movies, and that's the truth. Is this important? Do you care?
Yes. As someone who has heard that argument and feels the exact same way, yes. I mean, you know, when we were talking about them shutting down things like Fox Searchlight and those smaller, you know, more adventurous studios, that's the studio shutting it down. Netflix didn't do that.
But Kaufman is totally right. You know, the adult drama is a thing that studios just don't make anymore. They're not interested in making. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, I remember last fall, Netflix gave us, you know, Marriage Story and The Irishman. And not only did they, you know, produce them and get them out to an audience, those movies got talked about on like Twitter and places like that in a way that a lot of films wouldn't, because studios would sort of open them on a couple screens and hope that maybe they got some Oscar nominations and we'll see. Like, they are still making the kind of, like, if you look back at the top 10, you know, box office list of like the 70s and 80s, you'll be shocked. I think like the number one movie of 1984 was something like Terms of Endearment. Like, you know, they actually used to put money into and know how to make money from movies that, you know, with actual characters and actual plots and drama. And you know, if studios could certainly make those alongside tentpoles. I'm not saying don't make tentpoles, but like, don't just make tentpoles.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I agree. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, we're gonna go ahead and take a quick break. But when we get back, we'll be talking about Hamilton just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Bria Grant, an e-reader who loves spoilers and chocolate.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara, a print book collector who will murder you if you spoil a book for me.
And we're the host of Reading Glasses, a podcast designed to help you read better.
Over the past few years, we've figured out why people read.
Self-improvement.
Escapism.
To distract ourselves from the world burning down.
And why they don't.
Not enough time.
Not knowing what to read.
And being overwhelmed by the number on their TBR list.
And we're here to help you with that. We will help you conquer your TBR pile while probably adding a bunch of books to it.
Reading Glasses.
Every week
on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ifeanyi Wade, and in the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Alonzo Duralde.
And today we're talking about Hamilton. Alonzo, would you mind providing us with a synopsis?
I went to IMDb. I'm a coward on this one. There's a lot to take in.
Smart.
This is the Disney scripted synopsis, so take it for what it's worth. Hamilton is the story of America then, told by America now. Featuring a score that blends hip-hop, jazz, R&B, and show tunes, Hamilton has taken the story of American founding father Alexander Hamilton and created a revolutionary moment in theater. A musical that has had a profound impact on culture, politics, and education. Captured at the Richard Rodgers Theater on Broadway in June 2016, the film transports its audience into the world of the Broadway show in a uniquely intimate way.
Mm.
Oh, which yeah, they really did an overview.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that this addresses that I just want to throw out real quick. I've seen a lot of discussion on Twitter like, oh, let's see more shows like this. And I have seen a lot of the sort of official recordings of live Broadway 100%. Shows. And they are very rarely cinematic in the way that this one is. So if this is your first time seeing a Broadway show captured on film, don't think they're all like this.
And I'd love to discuss, I mean, once we get into... beyond Hamilton itself, there is something to be said about the filmmaking of this, because it sets apart from there's a lot of times where people try and capture what's going on a stage in a dynamic way, and it often falls short. This one did not.
It did not.
I don't know about you guys. I have never seen or heard Hamilton before this.
Me neither. Same.
We're all newbies. And it's not because I was disinterested. I really like musical theater, and I wanted to be able to see it before I listened to it, because it's symbiotic, right? Like, that's why it's not just a recording. And then this all happened. So this, it actually... I was very pleased that they made this available. So I could finally jump in on it.
Yeah, tickets have been just so impossible to come by the few times that it's been in Los Angeles. And I have to say, if I had been able to score a ticket at some point, I probably would have tried to listen to the cast album first, just because I know that with the hip hop of it all, there was going to be a lot of very fast dialogue happening. I wanted to have some clue of it, because I remember like Dave and I, not famously, but years ago, back in the 90s, we went to see the first touring company of Rent when they came to Dallas, and the acoustics were not great, and you couldn't understand anything that anybody was saying, and I thought I didn't want to go through that again. But not only getting to see it at home, but getting to see it on Disney Plus with subtitles on was a great help for my first time viewing it.
I also watched with subtitles entirely because it's one of the reasons I love hip hop. And it's one of the things that I do think in the blending of tones, it takes advantage of there's the rhyme scheme in hip hop that can really play with syncopation, that can play with pacing and rhyming things mid sentence versus at the end of verses. I wanted to get all that. I figured I could follow the plot if the rest of America did, but I love wordplay and I love language, and this did not disappoint on this.
I feel like, I didn't see it live as well. And, you know, the next one is, does it live up to the hype? And I feel like if I would have saw it in its prime, back when people were hyped about it, back in 2016, oh man, I probably would have been feeling it. I would have been in it, but I've been in it. But now with watching it last night with my 2020 cynicism, having heard, such albums as Damn, Schoolboy Q's Blank Face, reminding myself that typically I genuinely like rap more when it sounds like somebody who could have murdered someone once in their life. I think the best thing was the tweet I tweeted last night.
Are you quoting your own tweet, Iffy?
Yeah, I'm quoting tweets.
What does Iffy say?
Half of me is enjoying Hamilton, and the other half kind of feels like this is like when a white comic raps during his set and gets an applause break, because it's there are a lot of impressive things that come off of as a bit corny to me, but then the performances Davey Diggs could do no wrong.
I love him so much.
I loved him in Blind Spotting.
Here's the thing, there's a history of, there's a subgenre of Broadway musicals that's like the rock musical,
yeah,
but the rock is firmly in quotes when it comes to Broadway, because Broadway does and needs to do to sort of communicate to an audience is its own separate category. And you may try to meld that with other kinds of music, but you're always going to have to be kind of Broadway about it. And so this is Broadway doing hip hop. And it's there are hip hop elements. There is hip hop structure. But at the end of the day, it's still Broadway. And so if you are coming in expecting it to be somebody's mixtape, it's going to be Broadway.
But the hip hop that this is referencing, though, is so, like, it's very clear Lin-Manuel Miranda is a huge 90s, like, there's so much DMZ to this, there's like Ja Rule, there's this very specific love that he has for the time when he was probably originating this. I think he started writing it in like 2004 or something. So that all makes sense. Alonso's totally right, like, you're taking something and then running it through the sausage factory that is Broadway, which is how do we make the most common denominator accessible stuff out of whatever. I thought that the blending of the music, because it's not just that, like, there's R&B flavor, there's a lot of different things. The song that's been stuck in my head, I told you guys, earworm style since I watched it last night, is Helpless, which was one of the female like R&B songs. It's a very Beyonce countdown song. I think that the female storylines in this is a great example of this musical. The workshop element of it has gives it life in a way that a lot of films are so rushed, and with this, of living with things, of playing, of having different viewpoints. But I think the other reason I really appreciated the female characters is it wasn't retrofitting them as like, oh, this one is secretly an assassin or whatever. They are limited by their societal structure of the time, and so a lot of the dramas they're up against are domestic, or their domesticity fighting their own ambition, that their role is to marry and all this. So it's still incorporating things that are very much what they would have faced, but showing that there's story and richness and depth still in that life. It's not, oh, these are not characters that we needed to hear about because they didn't have anything happening, which is what we do when we think it's uninteresting to lead a domestic life.
Yeah, there was somebody I saw on Twitter this week, was it James Joyce? There was some notable author who talked about how we don't really give enough credit to Jane Austen being so stark about the economic realities of people's lives. Yeah. And so people think those books are sort of like, you know, kind of fluffy romances about women getting married. But it's like, no, that's the world that they live in. That's the water they swim in, you know, and to decide that's less important than going to war or like starting a bank or whatever. It's like, you're doing to them what their peers did, which was to not take them seriously and not give them opportunities and not provide them agency. And so, yeah, for the Schuyler sisters to be like, well, I can't marry him because I have to marry Rich. You have to marry him, even though I love him. Like that is historical, both in its accuracy and in its just sort of honesty about like the choices that they had.
Are you guys, so obviously they are going to do a filmed version of this, and it's been underway for a good while. And I will be interested, and I know that I don't know if you know this, I'm a fan of the film as an art form. So I know the cinema? there's things that cinema can offer this, but I'm also someone who, like, the purity of what this is trying to do, and like you have there's one of the dancers in the chorus, she's also a singer, but her character is called the Bullet, and so you continually see her every time someone's shot. There's numerous duels. If you were worried that this would not have enough duels it's got.
Oh yeah,
yes. And every and numbers time about songs about duels.
Songs about duels. I definitely know the rules of duels. There are 10 of them. But so the Bullet. Like acts like the Bullet and, you know, follows the trajectory of it. And those are things that the kind of shorthand of theater or the inventive way around how do we depict this, that when you do a filmed stage musical, or sorry, when you do a filmed musical as its own movie, those are the sort of theatrical things that you leave by the wayside. And that's kind of a little,
which is not to say they can't figure out some way to incorporate that to sort of like have, you know,
true.
Who
yes.
knows? But,
yes.
But yeah, no, I would like to see it. I mean, it's, you know, there is the history of Broadway hits becoming movies is such a mixed bag.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are great ones and there are cats, you know, like
not everyone can be cats.
In the Heights is coming out next summer. Now they've pushed it, but that was obviously his first big musical. And the guy, Anthony Ramos, who plays John Lawrence in this, and then the younger Philip Hamilton is the lead in the Heights. Oh, yeah. He's taking the role that that Miranda played in it.
Apparently Disney went to Miranda about moving up the timeline for this, because this was supposed to open theatrically next year. And they were like, well, let's do it on Disney Plus now. And I think it was shrewd of Miranda to eventually agree to do it, because not having In the Heights this year, putting it next year would have put those two things in competition. It would have, I think this sort of gives him another year's worth of like juice basically to bring us into the Heights next year.
Yeah, that was very smart. Like, you know, the conversation around Hamilton has kicked up again, albeit more critical and more people trying to have good Twitter threads because they said the wokest thing. Good points are being made, but then I think some people just there's a pedantry that goes with Twitter threads where you try and like ignore the art being made to make the point, and it's so transparent at this point that I just roll my eyes every time where it's like, oh, you mean this wasn't exactly a historical look at Hamilton, this thing that has black people playing the founding fathers?
I was going to say, if you have like a tall, black, beautiful Thomas Jefferson played by David Diggs and a reference to Sally Hemings within that performance, I'm not saying that you know, you can clap your hands, you're done. But like, you can't tell me this show isn't addressing that slavery is the thread undercurrent that goes through this thing. If you wanted more of it and they didn't give you enough of it, then that's another argument to be made. But I mean, I think that, yeah, we're in this thing of like, I think we need to be able to assume that audiences know enough history that certain things can be just like taken as read. And I guess
yeah,
some people don't want to give that
You know. Well, we also have that 2020 cynicism, but I feel like there are people who I know are dealing with 2020 cynicism, and there are people who I know that is their content, is finding things wrong with things. And so they will, no matter how perfect this movie would have been, would have pointed at a way to not like it. I'll say on that, because I've ranted about this before.
The best Twitter thread I saw, because I'm not on Twitter that much, was actually a wonderful, and you should look at it, because it was this woman who went and read all of the letters between Hamilton and John Laurens and was basically like, oh, these two were madly in love and probably physical, and tried to like arrange their marriages so they would be marrying women who lived near each other. Anyway, you should look out that thread, because I found it very exciting.
Ooh, saucy. If you'd like to hear us talk about another film stage musical, then listen to our bonus content episode, where we talk about the film stage version of Cats with the comedian Joey Clift. And all you have to do is become a member at www.maximumfun.org/join to support our show, and you'll get access to our bonus content episode, as well as a bunch of other bonus content episodes. But right now, we're going to give our final review of Hamilton. So would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
Oh, screen it for sure. And given that this was intended to be a theatrical release at one point, it would be nice in the future to screen it and to see it projected. But that said, again, I think given my old man ears, I was delighted to have my first crack at it be with the closed captions on.
That's fair. I'm also a screen it. I thought this was wonderful. I watched it on Casey's brother's account, to which I'm grateful, and I may watch it again before I give up that account forever. I think it's wonderful and musically inventive and visually interesting, and I highly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can, you know, give a million and one reasons why I feel different ways about this. But at the end of the day, I think if you are a fan of musical theater, you can go ahead and screen it. You're going to love it. You're going to do it. You're going to go in. If you're one of those people who are looking for reasons to see if this is worth the hype, you're a hip hop head, then I would say stream it, because you're going to find something you don't like, and I don't want you talking in the theater. And that's my final review of Hamilton. But we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Rocket Ship 1, this is Mission Control. Come in.
This is Rocket Ship 1. Go ahead.
Rocket Ship, what's your status on Max Fun Drive? Shouldn't we have seen it by now?
Sorry about that, Mission Control. Turns out I miscalculated. Current projected ETA for Max Fun Drive is July 13, but it looks different. It'll be for 4 weeks, so it's longer than expected, but all readings point to low-key.
Oh, that'll be good. But can you verify that there are still special gifts for new and upgrading monthly members?
Verified. Sweet gifts for new and upgrading members, plus amazing new episodes, and even special weekly live streams for charity.
Copy that. Rocket Ship, can you confirm ETA for Max Fun Drive?
90% probability of Max Fun Drive from July 13 to August 7.
Did you say 90%?
There were a couple of decimal places, and I might have carried a zero wrong.
I'm just going to pencil in July 13th to August 7th. Mission Control out.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Drea Clark.
And now it's time to answer a call from the Who Shot line. Casey, play that call.
Hi there, my name is Blue Jay. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. My question is, what does reparation work look like in the film TV industry as far as giving space for marginalized communities to have autonomy over how their stories are told? And how can the average non-industry individual go about supporting this effort? Thank you.
Ooh, can I kick this off? Can I
please,
let me
please,
at
please,
it?
Please,
because
please.
This is a question we got a lot on Nerdificent, because we would talk about this a lot, and people was like, and we get a lot of older white dudes in our DMs where it's like, look, well, you know, I'm writing a story and I want to include POC and all this. And it's like, look, here it is. We're not saying, and I don't think anyone is saying, that no one can tell stories of marginalized community. But what we are saying is, until there is equal opportunity and those stories being told by the people from those communities, every time you choose to tell that story, it takes it from that person. I think that was the Green Book. That was
going to say, are we talking about Green Book?
Yeah. Green Book was the biggest thing of this, where it's like, on paper, a white dude writing the Green Book story isn't the worst, but the fact that he made the story, took the title Green Book, means that if a black person wanted to tell the story about Green Book in a way that centers on black people, it now has to find a way to tell that story and also explain to executives why their version deserves to be told, even though this one was already told. So I think, you know, I think the best way is, if you aren't a person of color or from a marginalized community, maybe don't make your story centered on that, because first off and foremost, you're not going to be the best at telling that story if you're not at the top of your game. There are some people who are good at telling these stories, like the guy who did Hustle and Flow is somehow
Craig
really
Brewer.
Good at telling. Yeah, he's somehow really good at telling black stories. But like, you have to just know that you are taking that spot.
This is on the creating side of things. So yeah. I think that's part of it, is if we keep letting stories that have people of color and those communities and that background as the fulcrum of the story being told by white creators, that disvalues the black creators that could be moving up. But it's also like how I'm always looking. It's like, what are we funding? What movies are being financed? What directors are being hired? What projects are being put through? Because it's not always about like which white person should or shouldn't be doing it. Most of the time they should not be doing it. But it's also, are we elevating the work and finding, not even finding, because they're out there. They're definitely out there. But it's creating actual jobs and financing actual projects. And that's not just the creators of executives or producers or whoever looking at and finding them, but it's also the kind of movies that we consider important or marketable or of interest to people needs to expand, because we have such a heavily divided, like, oh, you can watch movies or you can watch a black movie. Like, there's literally an entire section of films that are like relegated, as if a black community wouldn't look at a Mark Wahlberg movie. You know, to my knowledge, they're not calling those movies white movies, so the reverse shouldn't necessarily be true. So it's blending those things, it's creating them, and it's putting more impetus on like what films are and should be and who they're representing, because there's still a pretty like narrow window of what is considered film worthy, and it's not the same as what's audience worthy or market worthy.
Yeah, and as far as like, you know, how to support this kind of thing as a consumer, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, your ticket is a vote, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, right now it's about streaming, obviously, but when it's in theaters, you know, go out opening weekend and see these movies and you know, support these filmmakers. If you want to support nonprofits that have that do a lot of mentorship, you know, Outfest in Los Angeles, for example, has a program called Outset that is, you know, for young LGBTQ filmmakers from like, I think, 15 to 25, you know, and allows them to work with professionals, and, you know, they create short films, and Film Independent in Los Angeles has Project Involve, which is a very direct kind of one-on-one mentorship program that is aimed at, you know, minority voices and creators in the world of film. Check out locally to see, you know, do you have a black film festival in town? Do you have a Latino film festival in town? Like, that kind of thing. And any way that you can either buy a ticket or become a member or a supporter, you know, that has an effect of letting these voices get heard, of encouraging people to make new movies, of connecting, you know, up and coming talent from different communities with the industry. So, yeah, I don't think it should be this thing where, you know, the studios are sort of, you know, oh, my largesse, I'm going to, you know, I'm right. going to throw some money to these projects to show that, you know, I'm really in support. No, like, actually, there are plenty of talented filmmakers who are women, who are people of color, who are queer, you know, who are, you know,
who are
disabled.
All three of those things at once.
All of those things at once. Imagine that, you know, and, you know, they can make commercial, you know, they can make movies that will make you money, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, I think we need to sort of shake off the idea of who the audience for these films are. You know, we've always talked about the fact that like one of the biggest segments of the audience in America that still goes to theaters is Hispanic, and like why you are just leaving that money on the table when you can really be like aiming at that audience and also being of interest and you know, having a wide audience wanting to go see those films. Like, make that gamble, go yeah. do it, because you know, it's just everything that you make is a gamble. There's no, you know, like unless you're making Fast Nine, there is no guarantee that people are going to show up for stuff. And so it's like, why not take that chance with a, you know, an interesting, you know, black or queer or female or all of the above filmmaker, you know, or Latinx or whatever else that you're going to give to like another, you know, white Harvard graduate.
I'd add to the idea of that of voting with your dollars, that a lot of independent films, they may be on Netflix for a moment. Like, you generally have a deal where you're up for like a year or two, mm-hmm. but then like those things are still rentable. And there's been so many great lists recently of black creators, of just people of color who are filmmakers, and there's other arts as well, but specifically speaking of film, look them up, and those movies are rentable. That still counts for the filmmaker. It also leave reviews, like leave iTunes yes. reviews, Amazon reviews. Those things are so important because it supports the work they've already done. But every time they're trying to put together another project, those are things that they can point to. Like some people, like social media following isn't necessarily a thing, but it still is helpful if like they're building their own audience. So just, I think doing groundwork to seek out who has already started putting themselves out there and started creating things on an independent level, seeking their films out and then supporting them in like ways like voting or ranking their films online. And unless you're going to be a dick about it.
Yeah. And leaving positive reviews also like helps the algorithm in the same way yes. that, oh, leaving a 5-star review for a podcast that you like does the same thing.
Oh, you don't say, Alonzo.
Just to pull a random example out of the ether.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great question. Yes. And Portland's really been holding it down. So good on you.
Yes. Keep up the good work.
Keep it up. P-Town. But now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So, Drea, why don't you start?
All right. So, my film, I feel like I always do films from Sundance, but a lot of films come out of Sundance, you guys. I can't help it. This is a film being released this weekend on Hulu called Palm Springs. It stars Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. I think it's a very fun view. It's a very summery view. And it is also a film, it's a rom-com of sorts, but like with a Lonely Island vibe to it. It is definitely in the sort of category of go in knowing as little as possible.
Okay.
And that will add to your enjoyment of it. It's a really fun, quirky view that gets a little weirder, but like I said, it's a Lonely Island project. So yeah, that's on Hulu, and it's also was the biggest sale out of Sundance. And what they did is they've got the amount of the last biggest sale of like 14 or 17 million or something stupid, and then added 69 cents to it. So, which is the exact, yes, do that. Nice. Anyway, Palm Springs, check it out.
Yeah, as someone who really thought a pop star was really underrated, that was like one of my weekends of, because that was the same weekend I watched Nice Guys too, and I was like, why isn't enough people talking about these movies. I'm loving them. And I don't know what happened. There probably was something bigger, more exciting that came out that weekend, but no one was talking about Popstar and Nice Guys, and I watched them the same weekend and loved them. So I'm going to jump into it. I closed my window when I Googled it because you said going blind.
I have to say it fast.
Blind.
I know you. You love to look things up.
I like to see. I gotta see. All right, what's your pick, Alonzo?
I was worried that Dre was going to take mine because mine also premiered at Sundance this year. and it is now available on Netflix, and it is the documentary Mucho Mucho Amor, which is about legendary Puerto Rican psychic and astrologer Walter Mercado. And if you've ever seen Walter Mercado on TV, you'll never forget it. And if you haven't, boy, are you in for a ride with this documentary. He dressed like Liberace and, you know, would always sort of tell you your future, but was relentlessly positive. His advice, his visions were always about love and about supporting people and about, you know, going for your dreams. And you know, this is a guy who was super flamboyant in a very macho Latin culture, and nonetheless became like a beloved icon. And to connect it with this week's episode, Lin-Manuel Miranda shows up and is so starstruck to meet Walter Mercado. It is the most adorable thing.
Yeah.
It's a lovely, lovely movie. I laughed, I cried, all the things. Check it out. It's on Netflix now. Mucho, mucho amor.
It's wonderful.
Mucho, mucho amor. Nice. For me, I'm going to keep this thing going. You know, I like to connect. As much as I like segues, I like to segue my picks. And when I tweeted out that Davey Diggs can do no wrong, someone was like, have you seen Blindspot? And I said, stop. Stop. Of course I saw it. As a matter of fact, I fell in love with Davey Diggs from that movie, not Hamilton. And then now I see him all the time when Naomi watches Sesame Street because he's the new Mr. Noodle in Sesame Street.
I saw Blindspotting at Sundance, so it all ties together.
But yes, please peep it. It's really, really timely right now.
Yeah.
Screaming.
It is. I'll name drop. I'm friends with the director, Carlos Lopez Estrada. And he also, Carlos directed a ton of videos for Clips, which is David's hip hop groups that you should check out because they are also inventive and whatever. Blindspotting's wonderful and iffy. I think it was my staff pick a minute ago. Or Clipping. I keep saying Clips, but that's a whole different band. That's a much harder band. Don't look up Clips. Iffy, I just want you to know, like, because we are just
we're right
simpatico.
There.
I got you.
We're
I got
right
you.
There. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We're with eyes locked, hearts clenched. All right. Well, now it's time for our 5-star reviews. If you write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it on air. This one is from LKT20. I used to listen to a ton of podcasts on my commute.
I hear you.
Now that I'm working from home, the only podcast I make sure to listen to each week is Who Shot You? Started my weekend with my friends, Iffy, Dre, and Alonzo. And of course, I wouldn't want to forget this week's special guest.
They tried. That was sweet.
Good hashtag catch, life goals. They're incredibly informed and informative, but you don't have to be a film buff to listen and enjoy. Their commentary is great for people at any level of fandom. Mostly, it's just great hanging out with them. I want to thank them in particular for urging me to see Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Drea is raising the roof, which I got to see in the theater and would not have seen otherwise. Love you guys. P.S. Alonzo, thanks for suggesting the Otter app, which has changed my life. They should totally sponsor you.
They right. should.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll clip this out and tweet it. You know?
Thanks, LKT.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. We're going to get on that Otter sponsorship. I promise you. me and Otter. I'm going to Zoom them right now. Well, Alonzo, Andrea, thank you for another great show. You the best around. No one's going to take you down. And again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY 803-1664. And like Jesse said earlier, the Max Fun Drive is coming up shortly on July 13th. If you're familiar with the Max Fun Drive, we're doing a longer, more casual one this year. And this is where we get most of our financial support to keep making this show each and every week. If you want to keep this baby thriving, please support us at MaximumFun.org/join. And we've got some fun stuff coming up for the Max Fun Drive, which starts July 13th, so stay tuned. And I'm not, you know, going to put any pressure on you because we're all going through some stuff, but just know this is my first. So, you know, this is how I look to Jesse and all those McElroys. Like, I really would love to show them up and put them in their place. But like I said, no pressure to any of you.
Just if he's first time, be gentle.
Yeah. Please. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.